Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff back from the clutches of something.
Yes. Well, the clutches are, they're still clutching. And now good. I get to give it to you. So enjoy.
Well, thank you very much. another gentleman who apparently has is also being clutched, and that is our fearless leader, Dr. Alan Chartok, who joins us via remote location. Good morning, sir.
A remote and hidden location. Yes, you can hear it in my voice. I suspect Ray Graff gave it to all of us.
When did Brenda Vaccaro become a guest on this program? That's amazing. That's great. Welcome, Brenda.
I love her. Yes, she's terrific. It's great to have you aboard. And our good old friend Mike Spain joins us, associate editor of the Times Union in Albany and beyond. Mike, good morning and thank you.
Good morning, and knock wood, I'm feeling fine.
Yeah, you and I are we're feeling okay. All right, let us start. We have a lot of stories to talk about, and let us begin with a story that's on the front page of the Times Union, and then we'll kind of zoom out and look at the national angle of this as well. Jimmy Vielkind reporting that Governor Cuomo is all but conceding that his proposals to tweak abortion law and enact a suite of women's rights provisions along with it and change the state's campaign finance system would not make it into law this legislative session.
Yeah, you know, the deadline is Thursday. That's when the legislature plans to get out of town. That means that beginning as early as yesterday or last night, they had to start printing the bills that they're going to vote on because they have to sit for a while, under the statutes that control the legislature. So it is pretty much a foregone conclusion that Governor Cuomo's plan to, it's a 10-point plan to promote women's rights. But one controversial aspect of it is to bring into New York State law essentially the same language as Roe versus Wade, and people who are in favor of reproductive rights say will assure that women in New York have access to reproductive services and abortions and it wouldn't be able to be legislated away. But that has been a stickler with the state Senate. That we have this Senate's independent Democratic conference that sort of jointly rules the Senate along with the Republican leadership in the Senate. And neither side is ready to bring this full 10-point bill to the floor. There's some talk about bringing 9 points and leaving the abortion one off. But it just reflects how still today it's a volatile issue. And it is in New York and it is across the country.
So then there's the article in the front page of the New York Times today where after Republicans lost the presidential election and seats in both the House and Senate last year, many in the party offered a stern admonishment. If we want to broaden our appeal, steer clear of divisive social and cultural issues. And yet, after the high-profile murder trial of an abortion doctor in Philadelphia this spring, Republicans in Washington and in state capitals across the country seem eager to reopen the emotional fight over a woman's right to end a pregnancy. Their efforts will move to the forefront today when House Republicans plan to bring to the floor a measure that would prohibit the procedure after 22 weeks of pregnancy, the most restrictive abortion bill to come to a vote in either chamber in more than a decade. Alan, what do you make of this move?
Well, you know, Joe, I've been thinking all morning about this, and here's Pete Seeger's great song, When Will They Ever Learn? They come out of this, as this time suggests, they come out of this election licking their wounds. They know they're behind with Hispanics. They know they're terribly behind with women. They know the abortion thing is going to kill them, and yet, because of the way we have set up our primary systems, where only a few committed people come out and vote, and usually they're the zealots, they're scared to death of going wrong on this thing. And so they're going to go back to the old ways, which has got to be great news for the Democrats, because they'll never win another presidential election if they keep this stuff up. Joe and Mike and Ray, I thought a little bit about Cuomo in all of this, as you might imagine. We all know that Andrew Cuomo wanted the Republicans to be in control in the Senate. He could have vetoed that famous apportionment law, which he promised to do in the campaign, and he didn't do it. And thereby, he assured that the Republicans would stay in power. I know he wanted the Republicans. The way that you do that, of course, is when the independent, so-called independent Democratic caucus, which was no more than a guy named Klein who really wanted to be the leader and who knew he was never going to be the leader with the people who were there, split off. All Cuomo had to do was call them all into a room and say, hey, boys, you're all Democrats. You're going to stay Democrats or you're going to feel my wrath. And he would have had it. And then think about this. He would have had everything he wanted. He would have had campaign finance. He would have had the abortion plank that he wants. He would have had all of it. But no, he wanted the nasty Republicans to be in power, to, like his papa did, and to say no to him so that he would look like a moderate. And that is, of course, what this is all about.
So allow me, Alan, to ask a very general, generic question about the abortion legislation that the governor has put forward in New York, which is, if not here to gain traction, where? In the sense of, if it doesn't go in New York, where is it going to go?
Well, let me put it this way. It would have gone in New York. Remember, there are more Democrats in the Senate than there are Republicans. It would have gone in New York unless he had played this very dangerous game, which has now resulted in all of this. But you're right. I was, I'm an old guy now. I remember when a guy named Michael stood up on the floor, a Democrat from the Syracuse area, changed his vote, and New York became the first in the nation on abortion. So now you're absolutely right. This does spell a bad thing for the rest of the country, although I have a feeling a lot of other states will leapfrog over us, and the conservative states will, of course, be going in the other direction, as we have heard.
So, Mike, as you said, we won't get 10 points, but we may get something out of this by Thursday.
Well, no, I think that, the way it sounds, nobody wanted to take part of a loaf, and it might come back up in a special session or it would be reintroduced later. That was the speculation as of yesterday, but, anything can happen in the last couple of days.
and Mike, the women's groups are saying that. They're saying don't do it.
Right. I mean, they think that if it's passed without this in it, this by itself will never get through. So that was the thinking that, a 10-point program with this as part of it would satisfy a lot of people and get support. And so far, it doesn't have enough support.
Mm. We should.
One other thing I just want to say real quickly.
Sure.
And I will be quick, is that Cuomo has the issue. I mean, a lot of politicians say they want something. It doesn't really matter if they get it. What matters is if, it looks like they were on the right side and they have, quote, have the issue. So, but you take a look. See how quick I'm going here.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you look at what has happened to Cuomo's popularity, it's gone down. And the reason it's going down is people think that politically he's impotent right now.
We're going to take a break.
No,
go ahead. No, finish your thought, Alan. Okay.
Well,
all right. Take a sip of water, get your voice back. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I will we'll pick up where we left off. You're listening to our roundtable panel. We love your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Rhinebeck Equine Hospital, welcoming Dr. Laura Jevsikas, specializing in equine internal medicine, critical care, and neonatology. RhinebeckEquine.com. Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, for 45 years offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And Marriott TownPlace Suites, downtown Albany, offering studio, 1- and 2-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok with us, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. We're talking about a bunch of different topics today, starting with the abortion issue, not only in New York State, but also that is being pushed by the GOP in Washington. Should note that the measure beyond Washington, advocates on both sides of the issue say the chance to limit abortion is in the near future. In several states, Republican-dominated state legislatures in South Carolina, in Wisconsin, are weighing bans similar to the one that the House will vote on, which would impose the 22-week limit based on the scientifically disputed theory that fetuses at that stage of development can feel pain. The measures stand a reasonable chance of passing in both states, as well as in Texas, where last week Governor Rick Perry added abortion restrictions to the legislature's agenda. Conservatives are pushing for a vote by next week. Already this year, Arkansas and North Dakota have passed even more restrictive bans in attempts to directly challenge Supreme Court precedent. And according to the New York Times, much of the movement in recent weeks can be linked to the outcry over the case of Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the Philadelphia physician who was convicted last month of first-degree murder for cutting the spines of babies after botched abortions. And, Alan, I'm curious as to your thoughts on the long-term implications of the Philadelphia case.
Well, the long-term implication, it seems to me, is that this is a setup for the Supreme Court. Now, you remember you got five people on the Supreme Court, four on the more liberal side. There are a lot of people who are speculating that Roe versus Wade is about to get reversed or mitigated. So now you have all these states challenging the existing Supreme Court rulings in Roe versus Wade, and we'll have to see whether or not this is the setup that they've been waiting for, that they'll turn around and they'll say, whoops, goodbye Roe versus Wade, which is why Governor Cuomo said quite correctly that he was, in my mind anyway, that he was setting up this thing so that if Roe versus Wade was reversed, New York would be in a position to say at least we here in New York have preserved this woman's right to choose.
Now, in this case in Philadelphia, of course, you know, both sides say that even those who favor a woman's right to end a pregnancy say that this underscores the need to have regulations and not to push it into the back alleys, so to speak. This guy Gosnell was running a clinic in West Philadelphia, catering to poor women, and it wasn't regulated. It was just a mess, and it brought out the need, according to those who support abortion rights, to have a more open and regulated system, and it doesn't really, that's how they put it down, but it certainly has politicized the case.
Mike, I would agree with that, but I want to tell you, I think what's happened here is that the opposition to abortion has now taken this aberrant behavior by this one doctor and tried to make the case everybody else is a killer.
Yeah.
There's an interesting quote in the New York Times article this morning, because we talk about who's supporting this, and they make the point that this reemergence of abortion as a driving issue among the conservative base has left some moderate Republicans upset and baffled. We go to Representative Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania, who says, "I think it's a stupid idea to bring this up. Quote, the economy is on everybody's mind. We're seeing stagnant job numbers. Confidence in the institution, in government, is eroding. And now we're going to have a debate on rape and abortion." How many people do you think agree with him in the majority, Alan?
I know all of the polls agree with him. They do agree with him. And they don't want a woman's right to an abortion touched, or a right to choose touched. Nevertheless, as I said before in my earlier extended remarks, that what we're talking about here is the fear short term of a Republican primary and getting kicked in the gut. Long term, they know that the Republicans, if they pursue this, are in a bad spot, and Dent is exactly right.
Do you think this will always, I find myself asking this question a lot, but when it comes to abortion, will we always be fighting this? Ever since we looked at this in Roe versus Wade,
right,
in the early 70s, we've been fighting this. I mean, is this always going to be a fight in this country?
Well, if somebody else wants to answer that question, that's fine. The answer is yes. And the reason is that if you think that God is talking to you, you know, and that in some cases supersedes man and women's laws that they make for themselves in your own mind. You know, I had a cousin who was pushed in front of a railroad train, in front of a subway train. He got out. He had multiple fractures of his bones and the rest. And the woman pleaded in the jury that God had made her do it. And one person sitting on the jury said, well, if God made her do it, then that's it. And they had a hung jury. Eventually, they convicted the woman. But the fact of the matter is that this is a very prevalent part of our socialization in this country, religious socialization in this country.
God commands you, you do it. It's not just fringe people thinking that God is telling them to put people in front of the train. I think there's some very established mainstream religions that are, you know, obviously the Catholic Church, but other Christian religions that have quarrel with this, and people struggle with it. I think it's a very difficult issue of conscience.
And I don't think it's all just the religious, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Humanists as well. I mean, and people who are interested in science as well. So it's not as clear-cut as that, as religious fanatics only, I think.
Well,
it's not going away anytime soon. I certainly wanted to give that as the flashpoint there, but I certainly believe there are honest people who believe that abortion is wrong, but because God told them that.
We're going to take a break. We are going to be back, and we will talk about several other issues, including the G8 summit and President Obama speaking out on surveillance, as well as graduation rates and other issues that are making the papers, including the Times Union. We'll talk about all of these issues and much more coming up on our panel. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, who joins us this morning. We welcome your comments, as always, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage directly, or our Facebook page, or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. Talking about many issues this morning, we're going to move on to an issue that's on the front page of the Times Union, and that is about graduation rates. Interesting article by education writer Scott Waldman taking a look at high school graduation rates that show New York's high school students remained steady at 74%.
Right, and this was the first year that a local diploma was no longer allowed, no longer available under New York rules. Prior to this year, students who essentially completed 4 years or completed the program were getting these non-state authorized diplomas, and the state stepped in and they raised the standards. And the fact that they have raised the standards and the graduation rate remains the same, I guess, is positive. But Scott Waldman reports today that some state education officials found little to celebrate in that number because there's far more grim statistics included in it. In fact, the gap between white and minority students remains wide, as does the rate of completion for students in poor districts compared to those in wealthier districts. And the graduation rate of white students is 28% higher than for black and Hispanic students. And, you know, this is problematic. Merrill Tisch, who's the region's chancellor, said that even those getting through, many and graduating in this 74%, are not all of them are fully ready to go to college.
So in the piece, and I must say I only read the very beginning, the gap between white and minority students remains wide. Has it changed significantly since the more rigorous testing went in?
I don't know that, but I know that the patterns are continuing. I mean, it's no surprise that the suburban districts that have you know, more financial stability, generally, not universally, have continued to have the highest graduation rates, and that's true in the capital region. The poorest graduation rate remains the city of Albany, which had a 49.2 8%, and it's among the worst in the state. Now, they have a new superintendent, Marguerite Vanden Weingard, who just started her job last fall, and, you know, she is adamant to say that that does not reflect what the community wants and it's going to change, and she's, you know, she was brought in, really, to address this this issue, and she's working on it. Doesn't happen overnight. In Schenectady, it's 58%. Again, a city with a lot of low-income residents and struggling, and Troy is at 72%, which is pretty good. But if you compare it to some of the region's suburban districts like Voorheesville, it's 97%. Niskayuna, which has a school vote today, by the way, second round at their school budget that was defeated a few weeks ago, they're at 96%. Bethlehem, very good district, 93%, and so on and so forth. So it hasn't reversed that trend, but this is only the first year that the state has punched up its requirements. It's a big challenge.
You always have to be a little aware of some of these numbers, especially when you're talking about some districts when they say, oh, you know, it's 78, it's 82%, and, that, you know, they're graduating 42 kids as opposed to these major city schools that are graduating hundreds and hundreds of kids. But anyway, you look at it, 49% for Albany is distressing.
It's dismal. I mean, you know, and that's not to say that some very good students don't come out of the Albany schools. I mean, you know, they go on to Ivy League colleges, and they've been very successful. But, you know, they have challenges because they have so many kids, and they have to educate them, and they would tell you that they don't have the resources. In Schenectady, that's been the big battle with their new superintendent, Larry Spring. He's been looking at the state aid formula, working with state legislators, and, you know, kind of lobbying to get that reviewed, because there just isn't enough money to support the kind of programs they need to raise the level, they say.
Alan, what do you think of getting those numbers up, especially for a school like Albany?
Well, you know, it's always been about social class. You know, the people who are in the worst financial distress obviously don't have the resources to do what my mom did. If I was lagging behind, get a tutor, you know, find somebody to help. You know, this is something that is classic. It happens all the time, except that when you see among different school districts different results, you know that there are things that work, those are the things that Albany has to concentrate on. I think we should remember that our departing mayor in Albany was a educator himself, vice principal at Albany High, and it has not been a priority, the right kind of priority for Albany, because you know, it's gotten a reputation of people not wanting to move into the district to have kids. Otherwise, they have to pay for Albany Academy for girls or boys, or the Holy Name School, or something where the kids will be isolated.
Well, you know, in this whole story about graduation rates, the you know, Merrill Tisch, the Regents Chancellor, also took a bit of a swipe at the teachers' unions, you know, because and defending the state's decision to keep doing standardized tests. Of course, last week the state, teachers came to Albany to protest that, to demonstrate that they're spending too much time preparing kids for tests, and this higher, more rigorous testing is really interfering with teaching. But in the end, you know, Tisch does say that teachers have stepped up and graduation rates are gradually improving, and they contend that this is the right way to go.
When things get worse, Joe, I'm sorry, when things get worse, there's always finger-pointing, the other guys are doing it. You know, I've always felt that some of the politicians in New York State looking for a scapegoat have looked at the teachers, and Merrill Tisch's remarks, it seems to me, are representative of that. After all, she's the head person when it comes to education in New York State. So somebody could say, okay, then she has the right to point fingers at teachers. But I think just the reverse.
We are going to move on to some other topics and talk about some national and international news. Let us begin with the G8 summit. The G8 meeting, where the U.S. and Russian presidents have acknowledged at the G8 meeting in Northern Ireland that they have a widely different stance on Syria, but did agree to push for a summit in Geneva. After face-to-face talks, President Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin said that they shared a common desire to end the violence, but also said they were optimistic on Iran after its presidential election. Earlier, the G8 nations discussed the global economy, with the leaders agreeing that world prospects remained weak. There's a lot of directions to go in there, but let us begin with Syria and the importance of this issue. And I guess, you know, Mike and I were talking about this prior to the broadcast of the public's grasp of this as an issue.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times today reports on a couple of polls, you know, a Pew poll and then a Gallup poll that was released Monday, that shows that Americans do not want to see the U.S. get back into, another ground war or even heavily involved in a war across the sea. The Pew study showed that 70% were opposed to U.S. stepping up a role in Syria. And, you know, that's very difficult for the White House and for Congress to plunge ahead when 70% are against it. And the other aspect of it is that they're not following it very much, I mean, which is an issue. It isn't like we're not talking about it, and it isn't like it isn't available to find out about it. But I think there's an enormous fatigue as we're sort of winding out of Afghanistan and just a few years after Iraq.
Yeah. I was at a dinner party.
The congressional...
Yeah. Go ahead, Al.
Sorry, go ahead, Ray.
I was at a dinner party Saturday night, and, well, it's tough with the tie line. You go first, and then I'll go.
No, I'm just going to say, on the congressional corner, we talked to Chris Gibson. He doesn't like going in. And we talked to Congressman Owens from the North Country, and a Democrat, and he doesn't want to go in. So now you got both parties reflective of what Mike was just saying, you know, this antipathy towards entering it. Of course, America didn't want to go into the Second World War either. You'll remember that. One fast thing, and that is, are you guys as scared as I am about Putin? I mean, you know that whole story the other day about how he took the Super Bowl ring and put it in his pocket and just walked away?
He feels he can do anything he wants.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. That scared the hell out of me. But anyway, Ray, you were going to say.
I was at a dinner party Saturday night, and one of the people there was a retired, longtime military guy who was honorably discharged a while back. And so we were talking about Syria. And he said, well, what's the harm, and is it not prudent to sometimes when there's a civil war just to let them fight it out? In other words, stay on the sidelines. And I said, well, what about Israel? And he said, Israel, they're more than capable of defending themselves. And I said, what about the 93,000 dead? Where does our moral obligation begin? And that is, I think, the ultimate question. We couldn't answer that one.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do to contribute without making it worse? And I think that's the dilemma the White House has. At least now they're talking about not replacing the government, but maybe, opening the prospect that if... there's just a change at the top that they could work with some people in the Syrian government, you know, and that will be probably an element of the Geneva talks, which is a good thing that there's going to be talks.
Yeah, but the thing that always gets me is, what about our moral responsibility? That's right. What about our moral responsibility? But who made us the guys? If you poll those people in each of these places we've gone in and say, should the Americans be here? They all say, hell no.
Well, here's the dilemma. You know, if nobody else is stepping up, then do we not have an obligation? And I'm not saying we do or don't. I say that's the question. If China and Russia drags their feet and people are being chemical weapon, being gassed and they're dying, at what point does it become someone's responsibility? And I don't know the answer to that. I have no idea. Pardon me.
But how take it to the absurd. What if somebody else decided they didn't like what was going on in the United States and say, it's our moral responsibility to come in here.
You make a point.
And clean this thing up.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to any of that. You do, but you're sick.
Well, I mean, it's a struggle. And
you are correct.
I mean, do you reach peace with war?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people who would say that, war doesn't make peace. But but then you think about World War II. And, I don't know that this is World War II, but, you wonder if it's if it's the kind of it's just sort of the line in the sand where we're going to be isolationist again and go through a period where we're going to let the rest of the world blow up while we sort of sit on the sidelines, and there's ramifications of that.
Well, and also, I mean, it seems that our wariness does not come. Does our wariness come out of a want for a want for peace and not for our women and men to enter into this, or does it come out of, as you said, just a fatigue because of all of the other collateral of the other military operations that we've recently have gone under and are still going through?
Well, I think the third option is the one we discussed on Saturday night at this party. It's one of pride. You weren't there. You weren't invited.
I wasn't invited.
Neither were you. No.
Yeah, that was wrong.
Pragmatism is what this gentleman said. You know, look at Egypt. We went in. We did what we thought we had to do. It's not exactly turned out as we expected it would. Now, there's a certain pragmatic level where you just say, let's see what happens, you know? And so I certainly can see that angle as well. There's no simple solution to this.
We're going to take
I was just going to say, remember that these are virtual civil wars, and usually there's a sort of sectarian, there's a religious division. And I don't know how we get involved in those, because in the end, when you're talking about, you know, the Sunnis and this and that, then it becomes very difficult for us to enter and claim any kind of moral superiority.
With that, we're going to take a quick break. We are going to be right back and continue our conversation. We always welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll return after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from the Event Center at Turning Stone, presenting singer, bandleader, and actor Harry Connick Jr. Wednesday, July 3rd at 8 p.m., turningstone.com. Blue Homes, building modern green homes, offering tours of their first New York Breeze House on June 21st and 22nd, bluhomes.com/Hudson for more information. And Kenco Work and Play Outfitters, Route 28 Kingston, locally owned outdoor outfitter supporting kayaking, hiking, archery, fly fishing, and more in the Hudson Valley since 1982. atkenco.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's our panel discussion this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, newsman Ray Graff, and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. And Mike, as we wrap up in our last few moments, let's go to a story that is in the business news section of the newspaper. A couple stories regarding green transit.
That's right. First of all, if you wanted to take your bicycle onto an Amtrak train, you could do so in California or North Carolina, but you can't do it if you're heading to the Adirondacks, and there are some people who want to change that.
Oh, boy.
There was a press event yesterday in Albany to promote the idea that Amtrak should have special cars that you can put your bikes on. You can, because a lot of people coming up from New York City, maybe heading to Vermont or the Adirondacks, don't have cars, but they have bicycles. They even own some of those bicycles. So, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer was one of those supporting it, and it kind of brings home the idea that more people are mobile, and we should follow the lead of other states that make it easy for people to have very active vacations.
Okay,
it's a good idea, right?
No.
You sound skeptical.
It isn't a good idea.
Wait a minute.
No, it's a dumb idea. And here's why it's a dumb idea. I mean, I have nothing against this about having a bike on a train. But let us talk about Amtrak and the funding of Amtrak and the fact that, you know, they don't even sell a cup of coffee in the newspaper in the train anymore because they can't afford to do that. They have these cars that are sitting there that aren't being used, and they've cut the schedule substantially from to different areas, and now you're going to put an investment so people can bring their bikes in on top of it?
Well, this is already being done in Maine and other places around the country. Why should New Yorkers be denied this added benefit if they're going to be on subsidized?
So here's the other question. When you rent the bike, the city bike, the CITI bike,
you can't take those on the train.
Yeah, is that what you're going to do?
You couldn't even fit those on the train, I think.
So why don't we do that in Albany and just have a stand waiting for the bikers when they get off the train and
rent the trains?
Well, what is the most economically viable way of doing this? You know, years ago, it was very rare that you could take your, you know, only a few places in the country would let you take your bicycle on a bus. But now look at these CDTA buses that
go
by.
Well, those are great because they have the racks right in the front.
Right in the front. You know, you can throw your bus, bicycle up on the bus and take it and then continue on your route. So, I mean, finding out ways to allow people to have more green and more healthier and more fit approaches to their transportation and by filling in those gaps.
Well, let them
bike a good idea.
From the city to the Adirondacks.
You know what? That's very cynical. It's a
the
very
city
cynical.
Bikes, yeah,
it's not very open and understanding.
Have you tried just to get your luggage up at the top without? Yeah. I mean, just those rolling
that's
luggages.
That's the point. There's not
enough
room. They need to add some. And you know, it would help everybody who has those big trunks when they're going off to the Adirondacks.
There you go.
Again, I have nothing wrong with this except for the fact of where is the money coming from.
Well, Amtrak baggage cars are being built in the southern tier in Elmira, so this would pump money into the New York economy, a part of the economy a part of the state that is suffering. So, you know, suffering more than others. So I think there's a lot of value to this. You know, it's chicken egg. If people did it, maybe more people would do it, and then suddenly it would be justified. So who's going to take the
first
step?
Why don't we hook some stationary bikes up and have them run the train with it?
You know, Ray?
Oh, now he's being cynical.
No.
Alan, you're not weighing in on this.
No, weight is very important. I'm all for people living healthy lives and riding all the bicycles they want, and I don't care.
Oh, good. Good for you.
But you take the train.
Right. Yeah, I do.
And don't you find it?
We were in the New York subways this weekend. And people were bringing their bikes onto the subways. I didn't know that was allowed.
That's new.
Relatively new. And let me tell you, those are crowded subways.
Yeah.
And when a guy comes on or a woman comes on with a bicycle, it really does cause a certain amount of consternation.
That's all I'm
saying. Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
All right now. All right.
All right. And then the other story.
All right. All right.
You know what? I think it's the codeine that's getting us.
And then the other story.
Well, the CDTA, the Capital District Transportation Authority, as it's better known or lesser known, is trying to promote public transit in the capital region. They're giving out free passes for people who turn in the best stories of how the bus saved them money. They're trying to point out that it makes sense. It's part of an 8th annual national Dump the Pump Day, and that'll be Thursday. And it was created back in 2006 to encourage the use of public transit to save on fuel consumption. And they're inviting riders to send in their transit savings stories and telling how much they saved by riding the bus over the last 12 months. And some of those people will win passes to continue to ride on the bus and save even more.
Some PR guy needs a real promotion.
I disagree. I think public transit it needs to be embraced.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely. You're exactly right. And these CTTA people have worked very, very hard to make it all work. People like their cars and have always liked their cars. And will continue to like their cars.
But now you can put your bicycle on a CDTA bus.
That's right. There you go. You know, when I lived in the city of Albany, and would just live on that bus system, and you have your card, and you go, get it for the month. That's the greatest thing in the world. You go to anywhere you want, and you figure it out. You know the system, and it's like any city.
Mm-hmm.
But it is it's reliable. It's
they're clean.
Relatively
no stress.
I'm going to even say fast. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a quick system.
Often air conditioned.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice way to get from point A to point B.
Relax. Listen to your iPod and whatever.
That's right. Mm-hmm. On your usually I'm only going like three blocks, but you can still.
I saw a great game of three card Monty on one about 10 years ago. I was taking it from down by the Capitol up to the station.
Did you win?
I didn't actually play that one. I decided I would sit that one out. I was waiting for the roulette wheel to come out.
Well, it's tough. There's just some.
There
are some areas you can't use. There's not public transit available, or not in a time. A consistent way, you'd have to go all the way from one place to another place to get a transfer to another place, and it just makes it a little impractical.
Take
so the car
train,
does
hop
work.
On a bike, you're good to go.
Yeah,
we
as
are.
Long as we're talking about as long as we're talking CDTA, I wanted to tell you aerodynamics bothers me a lot because in front of our building, behind the great edifice for the bus stop, we get every piece of garbage for 25 miles in either directions. I don't know how it works.
Well, tomorrow's topic.
That's a wind tunnel, and the biggest snow fort ever. We're out of time. We're desperately out of time.
Yes, thankfully.
Mike, Ray, Alan, at least Alan and Ray get better.
Okay.
Mike and I are here to keep the fort alive.
You guys will be sick tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's right, Alan.
Guaranteed. We're very excited. Thank you very much. The roundtable continues after this short break.